what they're saying in this decision, is that there is some hope for rehabilitation of juveniles, and we need to hold on to that hope, and that the Constitution actually provides protections for juveniles so that we can consider them as being capable of being rehabilitated as opposed to just simply being punished. And that, I think, is a step in the right direction for this country. The other reason why the opinion is very important is because the Supreme Court cited to international customs and practices, and they acknowledged that the United States stood alone in punishing juveniles so severely. There, I believe in the opinion they stated that only the United States and Israel really fell into this category of meting out such serious sentences for juveniles, and now the United States no longer stands at odds with the rest of the world. And the fact that the Supreme Court actually cited international customs and practices, I think, is also a step in the right direction for this country.
So typically the Supreme Court does not cite international customs?
That's correct. I mean, we went through a period of time where the Supreme Court very clearly had a majority that felt that international law and practice was not relevant to Supreme Court rulings. And today, with a 6-3 majority in the Graham versus Florida case, we have the court saying, well, maybe we're rethinking that. And in fact, they are rethinking it because they included commentary about other countries and how we as the United States were not on the right side of this issue when you looked at this issue internationally. And I think that that is of huge significance to American jurisprudence in general, not just on this issue of juvenile offenders.
Some of these juvenile offenders are committing crimes that are less serious than murder. And what are these crimes, and how is a life sentence justified?
Well, I don't believe that life sentences without parole are justified for juveniles. But, I mean, the other crimes include anything that's not homicide, robbery, theft, aggravated assault, aggravated battery, things of that nature. And rape, I'm sure, is probably one of the crimes that has been considered as well.
How was the case argued in terms of cruel and unusual punishment? Obviously, it's an ambiguous concept that is debated and has been for years.
And will continue to be. That's true. Well, I mean, the key issue under the Eighth Amendment with this case is whether or not the sentence of life without parole is disproportionate to a non-homicidal crime. And there is a huge controversy among the Supreme Court justices as to whether or not there really is any sort of rule that requires, or any constitutional requirement, that a sentence must be proportional to the crime that's committed. Now, the majority of the court today has obviously indicated that they believe there is a proportionality requirement, and that in order to be punished severely, the crime must be proportional to the sentence. But there are at least three justices, Scalia, Thomas, and Alito, who disagree with that perspective.
I was actually going to ask you about that. Obviously, we have a few very conservative justices on the Supreme Court. So I wanted to know if that made it more surprising for you.
Well, actually, I had believed that this decision would come out the way that it did today. I wasn't sure what the head count would be, but we've had a series of opinions from the Supreme Court that seem to be indicating that there was a majority here that believed that there's a proportionality requirement. And when we held that the death sentence was an inappropriate punishment for a person committing rape, we were moving in the direction of saying that there are some forms of punishment that are too extreme and will violate the Eighth Amendment. You know, when we found that we shouldn't be sentencing individuals to death who are not mentally capable of understanding the wrong that they have committed, we were moving in the direction of fully embracing the fact that there is a proportionality requirement incorporated into the Eighth Amendment cruel and unusual punishment clause. So it wasn't so much of a surprise to me, but it is definitely a welcome opinion and one that I think will have a huge impact on the future public policy of criminal justice, particularly as it pertains to juveniles.
In their dissents, the three justices who did dissent, what was their reasoning?
They don't believe that there is any constitutional requirement that a sentence be proportional to the crime that's committed. They believe that the other justices are simply reading this requirement into the Eighth Amendment, and they believe that the more appropriate judicial perspective is to just read the Constitution's text. If the words aren't in there, we shouldn't be implying any other restriction. But the majority of the court obviously disagreed.